Hey, it's Amy Brown here to talk about St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. For 60 years, St. Jude doctors and researchers have helped push the overall childhood cancer survivor rate from 20% to more than 80%. But we need your help getting that number to 100%. And most important, your support means that families will never receive a bill from St. Jude for treatment, travel, housing, or food. Now, that peace of mind means so much. So join me in helping St. Jude in the fight against childhood cancer. Become a partner in hope and text Bobby to 785-833. That's B-O-B-B-Y to 785-833.
Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. You know, before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the rise of outlaw country music and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision in her tiny living room, far from Nashville's Music Row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p.
Nickelback, they released How You Remind Me just after we released Wasting My Time. So they, for lack of a better word, they cock-blocked us. Over the entire world at rock radio, they were number one and we were number two. And we were on tour with them. They took us out on tour.
Episode 380, Dallas Smith. Dallas has more number ones, I think, than any Canadian country artist in history.
He has the most, 12.
Crazy. I'm a big fan of the guy and his current work, but also I loved his band Default, as I called them. But after I hung out with him, he kept saying Default, and I was like, well, if he says it's the name of the band, that's what it is. But you would know Default from Wasting My Time. Well, this is not for real, afraid to feel. I just hit the floor, don't ask for more. Now wasting. And that was a jam. So, and the question was, because that was 2001 and they blew up pretty quickly. Some of these artists don't like to talk about when they had a different, not even trajectory, but kind of a different genre life.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered that with them, like, do you still play that song? And I just thought his answer was cool. And I liked how he approaches it. So I don't know. It's really cool. I was pumped that he came down. I think he came down basically just to do this,
yeah,
which is extremely complimentary, and enjoyed spending time with him. Again, his name's Dallas Smith. Follow him at Dallas Smith Music. You can even go see what he looks like. I prefer to do that on podcasts sometimes because if I'm going to listen to somebody for an hour, I want to know what they look like so I can visualize them talking in my head. Do you ever do that?
Yeah, I do that a lot too.
He has a new single called Singing in a Beer. Here you go. I hope you enjoy this. Dallas Smith. By the way, CCMA, Entertainer of the Year, 1920 and 2021. A massive, massive, massive Canadian artist, and he should be big here in the States. And I'm rooting for him, and here you go. Dallas, how's it going, buddy?
I am great. I am fantastic.
Yeah. I've been a fan, casual and even more than casual, for a long time, just depending on what project. And I guess my first introduction to you was I've worked in every kind of radio over the years, but pop, hip-hop, alternative, obviously country.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from a very rural part of Arkansas. But I guess I was introduced with Default. We used to play that song all the time. I'm wasting my time.
Yep, that's the one.
I thought when you would come in, you would have a much, like, you're normal. You have a lot of tattoos, but you're like a normal, approachable, warm guy.
Yeah, I'm a Vancouver-based father who plays music, and I'm just a man.
Your voice is very, you know what I like about your voice in both, in whatever iteration. Especially now, I've become a fan of you now more than I ever was then because mostly it was on one song.
Yep.
Now it's a body of work.
Yeah, okay.
Obviously.
Yep.
But, you know, I guess I have a really wimpy voice. You have a really strong.
People were always like, especially in the Default stuff, it was a more of aggressive vocal. And when they would meet me in person, and I'm heavier than what I was when I was, you know, 22, I was like 160. And people would be shocked. that I wasn't 6'2 and 200 pounds or something.
Do you live primarily in Canada now?
I do. It's always been my home base. I live, I walk my daughter to the school that I went to, grade 8.
Wow.
At a fine arts school.
Did you always stay in that same?
I always did. I always did. Yeah, I got married I was with my son's mom from my late teens. And then we went through that whole touring process and the default thing and the big hit, and had a boy who's now going to be turning 18 this year. And I've had some different, you know, opportunities down here, different deals, and been very fortunate that way. But I would spend like a week down here, and the idea of me not being involved in my son's life, I wouldn't be able to sleep at night. So it's kept me on the West Coast and really, really close to home. And I think that's really done me a service in like how I grew as a person. And it gave me a different perspective on what it changed how my records would have sounded.
Meaning
if I was down here.
Not influenced by what is here?
Yes. Yeah. I've kind of done my own thing with the guide of some great songwriters down here. And a really good supporting system with Joey and Seth and the camp at Big Loud, yeah.
Vancouver's basically Seattle,
it
up,
is.
Right?
It is, yeah, yeah. So you think gloomy and rain and that is us for a good chunk of this time of year, yeah.
I've said to a few people over the last few years, because I felt like you were predominantly in Canada, but yeah. I was like, man, this guy, like, he deserves a shot here. It's just, as you know, it's that infrastructure and them kind of committing to supporting you here, and maybe they think it's a bit more difficult because you're not. I don't know. Have you guys had a conversation about, what about this single in the States? Because I know we've played.
Yes.
I program a national countdown show, and we did 1-2.
Yep.
Right, with you and McKenzie.
Yep.
And I played that here, and I was like, man, the song is good. Like, what is that conversation like?
It's funny because I listened to the podcast that you did with Joey. And the one thing Joey said was that, yeah, he's committed to work in Canada. And I remember I picked up on that, what he said. And I've always had, like, I had Tipping Point. That was a bigger song. It was on The Highway, I think it was.
I remember,
on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hit the top of that one, and Wasting Gas did well. I've had songs in here that you know, coulda, shoulda, woulda, maybe if I was down here. But, it was just never really a thing. Like, I was signed to Big Machine with Tipping Point, and I had a release with them and stuff, but I remember one of the guys, the head guys there, was like, so when are you moving down? And it was that moment of like, ah, yeah, okay.
How old is your youngest child? Is it 18? Or do you have a younger
one? No, I have, she just turned 2, is my little
2.
One. Yeah, okay. So I got 2, and then my daughter is, she's going to be 9 here at the end of the month.
And you are, because Garth went back home, right?
Yep.
And he lived in Oklahoma.
Yep.
He was like, I'm going to go raise my kids.
Yeah.
And that was obviously of the extreme importance to him. So that's what he did. You know, he
yeah.
just said, Nashville, I got to peace out. I'm going to go raise my kids. And so I was going to say, if you're 18 was the youngest, you could come on down.
Yes.
But
I've got other, I
respect that, man. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it's one of those, like your moral guide and kind of what you want to look back on. And family is a really, really important thing. And I'd never wanted, you know, lack of being there to be a consequence for my son, like, yeah, and my kids. Yeah.
Have you, and I have, I do not follow many people on TikTok. I just expect everybody to follow me. But have you, do you post new music on TikTok? Do you go out and play?
Coming from, like, I got into music just because I love performing music and music. I didn't get into there to promote myself. And it's one thing that I really have a hard time with and I have to get better with. I'm record label breathing down my throat about doing that kind of stuff, right? So I have to get better at it, but I'm not on TikTok a whole lot.
I was going to say, because there are artists now who in this space, and I'm going to get off this, but I guess my frustration is you're so good as a songwriter and an artist. I hate to see something as trivial as proximity hold you back, and I know it does a bit just because of how the people here work. And it's so dumb, but like a Zach Bryan, for example, blew up on TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
Really good. He does not live here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he still lives in Oklahoma and tours all over the place. And, you know, TikTok being utilized in that way a lot. It's like, you're just so freaking good. Like, what do we got to do to get people to give you that look?
But honestly, a lot of that stuff falls on the artist. So that just kind of goes back to that. I need to be better at that because that's a lot more eyeballs on me if I get comfortable doing that. But that goes back to it's not really why I got into it, you know, but it is what it is.
When you grew up, what was home like for you?
Home was, it was a great place to grow up. I mean, the Lower Mainland of British Columbia is a gorgeous place. School was good. My parents were really, really, really good people.
Were they musical at all?
Yeah, my mom was in Sweet Adeline, so women's professional choir. So I grew up listening to her doing warm-up scales and, you know, practicing the harmonies and different, you know, all that kind of stuff. And she used to go to me for, like, her pitch and stuff, and I'd be able to tell her at a young, young age.
Do you think, just you guessing, I'm not going to hold you or fact check you, or do you think that your ability to sing and to, because you said you heard your mom doing it very young.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that was like intrinsically part of you because it was her, or do you think you were just around it so much that it developed?
I don't know. I got the sense from my parents that music was more than a background thing. It's part of my soul, and like part of my being is music and songs. And I got that from them, I think.
Who did they listen to growing up that you remember going?
Oh, everything. I had everything. It was a lot of female. It was Judds and Reba, Katie Lang.
Your parents like country music too.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. Absolutely. I actually Langley, BC is its motto is where city meets country. So it's kind of the outskirts of Vancouver and a lot of equestrian farmland and all surround. Like I can literally hop in my backyard and hit a cow with a rock. So it's that type of place, right? And it's changed over the years, but so it was like that. It was a real mix. Like Katie Lang actually lived down the street in the area that we live in, and it was around. CMT Canada was played all the time. And then my dad, like they shared the Beatles. They shared a lot of that stuff, but it was like Stevie Ray Vaughan and Zeppelin and lots of stuff like that.
It sounds like whatever it was soul filled though. If it's country or obviously Stevie Ray Vaughan and Zeppelin, both extreme soul influenced artists.
Yeah, and a lot of the stuff really blended together, like looking back on it. I mean, like the Doobie Brothers stuff and like, you know, it was what was country and what was not country at the time would be different now.
Sure.
Yeah. So I was filled with a real broad musical palette, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The Doobie Brothers would be a country act now.
Absolutely, I think so too, yeah.
Yep. I mean, just...
It reminds me of, like, kind of, I don't know if it's the right one, but not Zach Bryan, but...
To me, it's obviously they're males, but Little Big Town, because of how their voices all blend together, yep. The Doobie Brothers did that a lot.
Yep.
Michael McDonald, by himself,
he's
obviously just a beast.
One of those voices that you just know, you know that voice when you hear it, yeah. Yeah.
So your parents listened to a lot of country, a lot of, well, it just sounds like anything that was soul-based. But your mom was a singer, though. What did she sing? What did the choir do?
Oh, it was Sweet Adeline's choir. So it's like old-time, like, it's not cool stuff at all.
But is it so not cool that it's actually cool?
It's not that far cool, no. it's that, right? And but my mom, she had, like, my aunt was in that with her, and it was a really part of her social network, and the music was really in our house.
Were there guitars in your house?
Yeah, my dad played guitar and sang and stuff. It wasn't around as much as my mom was. My mom was more up front. But my dad played guitar more and stuff when he was younger.
Was he someone who wanted to be professionally an artist and for some reason didn't work out?
I don't think it went that far. I think it was a hobby thing that he did. But it was something that I saw him do, as a kid.
Pretty reserved guy.
Me? Yeah. My wife is the not reserved one. My wife is out there for sure.
So was this an issue as a kid?
Yeah, it was. So this is a really cool thing that why I'm thankful I'm able to come on here is I have a different story and I'm able to tell this one to a new audience. But my start was very different, and this goes to like the Joey connection and things. And I would sing and stuff when I was a kid with my mom and just in general. And then when I was about 6 or 7, that kind of age where you kind of get awkward, you start, you know, thinking about how other people view you and stuff, I got extremely shy and I went completely internal. And it like to a crippling point throughout high school, anxiety, just not knowing what mental illness stuff was as a kid, just wasn't right? But looking back on it,
we were not educated. We're about the same age. So we weren't. It was not a thing.
You're just weird, or you're quiet,
especially
or you're awkward.
In rural parts of wherever. There are other things you have to worry about.
Yep.
And you're not really taught.
Yep. Yep. So you're just kind of like in white knuckle mode, and you're just kind of getting through. It was a good childhood, but there was definitely some things that. So I didn't sing at all. I just shut up and became extremely shy about it.
Did you sing in your own room, though, when no one was around?
Car, yeah, oh yeah.
So you would enjoy it, but you wouldn't want to do it in front of
people.
It
was a personal thing. Sure. It was something I didn't share with anybody at all. I was one of those kids that went home from school, and I had a couple hours before my parents would get home, and that was my moment to myself. I didn't have to worry about any, you know, toxicity at school or whatever was going on with that kind of stuff.
Were you picked on at school?
At times I was picked on, and then, you know, when you get, just being honest, when you have self-esteem and like anxiety and things like that, that's your experience, you lash out as well. So that's things that I look back on my childhood that I wish I had approached differently.
Did you get in trouble?
Not a ton. I think like I had a really good vice principal at my school, and I think he recognized that I was a good kid, and, you know, I was the odd one out at times, and it was something different. So that was my experience of mostly high school. And then I had made some friends.
Did you sing at all in high school? And anything?
Not publicly, no, man. Nothing.
None.
No, that's what I get to. Like, my first time singing was with the drummer of my sister's old band, my younger sister, Danny Craig, who was ended up being the drummer in Default, and that's where we rehearsed. I wanted to show up one day. I had a couple drinks on a Friday night, and I personally just wanted to get over the fear of singing. Like, I was just, okay, I've got to take a step forward and break out of this box that I'm in. Really enjoy this. I have to do it. And I had no intentions of it becoming a career, becoming it something that I was going to do. It was just something that I wanted to do as a person and show that I could do. And I sang Plush by Stone Temple Pilots.
Just you two?
Just the drummer and Jeremy Hora, who's ended up being the guitar player for Default. We just jammed that song, and like within the year, we had a U.S. record deal.
Do you remember that evening or morning whenever you decided to sing with those guys? Because it sounds like that was a moment for you, because there's a big monster. You got to go fight the monster, and the monster is your shyness. You go and sing. Like, can you vividly remember that evening where you're like, I'm just going to do it, and telling those guys you wanted to sing?
It was freeing. I remember that. It was the first time I'd really taken that big scary step forward with something that really freaked me out. And that really freaked me out, putting yourself out like that.
Why though? Like, why that night? Why that time?
Oh, honestly, like, this is getting into like, but like negative self-talk, like just my self-confidence was nothing.
But it sounds like you had awareness.
I have awareness now.
But it sounds like you may have had some sort of awareness then. If you're thinking to yourself, I've got to go, I have to do this because I'm in such a place. Because I don't know why you would even go and you would put yourself up against something that was uncomfortable unless you knew you needed to be uncomfortable
out of something. I had no other outlet. I had no other outlet. And that was more of a survival thing, I think.
What were you doing for a job at that point?
I worked at Canadian Tire, which is like the hardware store. Big,
not a tire store.
They sold tires. That's how they started, I think. But it was like, it's like, what would that be down here? Like Home Depot or something like that. Yeah.
So you're doing that, and how old were you? Put me to age range.
So I first sang with those guys when I was 20.
Okay, so you're 18, 19 years old. What did you think you were going to do for the rest of your life?
I had no idea. No idea. I was lost after high school. I actually had to repeat grade 12. I just didn't want to go.
Did you not go? That's what I was going to say. Did you not go?
I just did not go. Yeah. I mean, it was that crippling to me as a kid, like the anxiety and stuff. It's like, if I did well in social studies, but then all of a sudden my whole year depended on that one thing where I had to get up in front of doing a presentation, I would fail. Like English class and poetry and all of that stuff, I would never, ever get myself in a position where people would be looking at me ever. It was the worst feeling for me ever.
So you sing with these guys.
Yep.
And you said soon you had a record deal offer.
Yeah.
But how? And they're on your sister's band too, right? At the time, both of those guys?
Yeah, my sister played with the drummer, like, and that's how I met Danny. Yeah. Yeah. And
so what are those steps from you singing for the first time? Because you have to go and sing somewhere now.
Yep.
And that has got to be even scarier than singing in front of no one.
Yep. We had a demo. We had written a handful of songs that ended up being on our first record. on like an old ADAT machine. And this would've been 1999, late 1999. And Wasting My Time wasn't on that one, but a few had. And there was a local radio station contest that was like a discovery thing for local talent. And Jeremy, our guitar player at the time, took this ADAT tape and dropped it off to a guy that he went to recording school with, which was Joey Moy.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so that's the connection there, because the old band had opened up for Nickelback and other local bands, and when Nickelback was playing in front of 15 people. So that was kind of a little community there. And so I think Joey told that story. It was like they had that little tape and they took it over to mm-hmm. Chad, and then there's like this kid's voice. And then Chad came over, introduced, and just got familiar with him as a songwriter. And he came in, and him and Joey sat in with us and started developing these songs and at Greenhouse Studios. So this is probably like 4 months after I joined the band.
Were you from the time that you sang with those two guys? Because again, pivotal moment.
Yep.
And I just want to go back there for a second. Did they go, dang, you're good? Did they say that and give you confidence?
The guitar, Jeremy, we talked about that after the fact. He was like, he was in right away, and we really connected that way. Danny, the drummer, is more strategic, more stoic. He was like, wait a minute, we'll wait, and we'll think about this a little longer. But, once we started writing and really started connecting, we were such great friends. It just made sense, and it worked.
If they wouldn't have been extremely positive about that performance, that vocal that evening,
yep.
Do you think you would have continued?
Not a chance.
I mean, I keep going back to that moment because for so many reasons, it was, again, I use the word pivotal as to you being here right now.
Yeah. Yep.
And those guys going, okay, we believe in you.
Yep.
Because they put their lives as teammates with you then.
Yeah. Yeah, man. That's a good way to look at that. I never really thought of it like that. But yeah, it was a very, very pivotal moment. Yeah.
So you're writing these songs, and when do you go play at a bar or a club or something?
It was after we had done the demo, like I did an independent recording with Chad and Joey.
You recorded all the stuff before you ever played it live?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'd never been on stage before.
That is crazy.
I had never been in a recording booth. I had never, my first time in a recording booth recording something was with Joey and at the helm. And I was the first recording that he had done that way. At a recording studio and been on the radio.
That's not how it usually works, as you know.
Man, my story is very odd.
Yeah, as you know.
Yeah, yeah. So it's, and that speaks to like why I didn't come down here and commit 100% to like leaving my son, is because that really wasn't, that's not my core value, is to like, I have to do this no matter what, no, nothing is going to get in my way. It's like, no, like, you know, I started off differently, right? And so,
what do you do with that record when you make it? We'll call it a record, the EP, yeah. the songs that you make.
A song called Deny.
Which that was a big song too.
That was a big song, yeah. Yeah.
Mike, can we hear a little bit of Deny?
It was our
here?
Second yep. single.
Here we go. So that was on the first group of songs.
That was our first like single. That's the first song that Chad and Joey and us had like put together in the studio and put out to the radio station, Fox, CFOX, for their yearly Battle of the Bands sort of deal.
Just sonically, that in Default's style, mm-hmm. your voice, especially your vocal with them, mm-hmm. it's totally different from the person that you were at the time. I mean, that's an aggressive, boom, you know,
yep.
big, like hard electric guitars.
Yep.
And you go from, well, this is my first time to sing, to Deny.
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't, there was a lot of like built up, not negativity, but like aggression, angst, whatever that was, it came out. And that's how that sounded. Yeah, even Wasting My Time, I mean, that explosive chorus came out of like anger and frustration, like truly.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct-to-consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. regular live music and events. There is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com. T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com.
T-E-C-O-V-A-S.
Yeah. Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How did the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as The Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, that's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Bachrach as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer, and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest. Hey, it's Bobby Bones. I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the kids at St. Jude. St. Jude's been leading the way in the world's best survival rates for some of the most aggressive forms of childhood cancer. Your support means that families never get a bill from St. Jude for treatment or travel or housing or food, so the families can focus on helping their child live. And that really hits home for me because I've been to St. Jude many times. I've hung out with the kids, played music for the kids. I was in the hospital a lot as a kid. Now, I didn't have cancer, but if it wasn't for people stepping up, I don't know that I would have been able to go and stay in the hospital and be taken care of. So that's why we do this, take care of others. You can help St. Jude stop childhood cancer by becoming a partner in hope. When you do this, you'll get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. So join all the doctors and researchers, you know, and me in this fight, and just text the word Bobby to 785-833. It's only six numbers, but text the word Bobby to 785-833. Did you feel like it could be either recording these songs or it can be your first times on stage that those, well, we can say releases or you, that performance that you're giving, did you feel like you were finally freeing something? Did you actually feel full? You know, there's definitely something you feel, people feel when they're on stage. Was that your first time to feel that?
It was something that I could bring to the table that it actually, you know what, it honestly gave me a way to connect emotionally and speak emotionally when I couldn't do that outside of song, outside of melody or how I was, you know, just that aggression. And that was my outlet, I guess, really what it was.
Tell me about the first time you performed in front of even one or seven people that are paying or are coming for free.
Man, yeah, that was in front of a lot of friends and family. But it was pretty well attended. And if there was a way that I could hide behind a single mic stand, like I did it. Yeah. I hid behind that thing, and I had a cigarette in my hand, and I must have been staring at the drummer, like Danny, for half the set. And yeah, that was another pivotal moment. But that wasn't really spontaneous. That was chosen by me. It was like I had to get ready for that one. So that was a completely different animal, and I was pretty freaked out. But yeah, every step was freeing in that way, because it was an absolute first for me.
Did you have, and do you have, stage fright?
I'm more comfortable performing songs as a singer than I am with the banter and stuff and like talking and doing that. I can easily get out and do, you know, big shows, thousands of people, and I don't get nervous for it. It's a different thing. But if I'm to sit here and do an acoustic performance in front of five people, it's very intimate and it's very uncomfortable.
I struggle with that. Yeah. In that I can do a stand-up show in front of 2,000 or 3,000 people. I can do a radio show to millions and be in person or on a microphone magnetic. Mm-hmm. I can be warm, affable, but one-on-one intimately, one-on-two, I really struggle.
Yep.
It's almost like the microphone is Superman's Clark Kent.
Yeah.
And I take it off and I have my cape then, you know, when I'm performing. And so was a bit of that, and I would go to therapy and they would say, well, you, And I would say, well, even though it's real, it doesn't feel real. I know it's real.
Yep.
Because everything I'm saying is for real. But it's like I'm talking to a microphone, or I'm on stage in front of people. You know, I'm not going to see them at home. And so it didn't feel real, even though I knew it was. And so I was able to get to that level of intimacy. Anything resonate with you when I say that?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's like a dissociation thing. Like you get up in front of that many people. And I always joked, it's if you're playing in front of five people, they could all think you suck. But if you're playing in front of a lot of people, the numbers work for you. There's probably enough to focus on. You can find somebody having a good time.
It's just more people think I suck, but yes.
Yeah. The numbers are in your favor. But there's definitely a dissociation thing when you hit that cruise control flow mode where the music just happens and it comes through you. That happens easier in that circumstance as opposed to in front of a couple people. Because I think you get in your head a lot more as opposed to just letting it happen.
What did your parents think about seeing the you that was performing when they knew the you that would really do nothing except go to his room and only sing there and before they got home?
Yeah. Well, they didn't even know I sang. That was the thing, right? Not even in my room. But they every step, I think even now, if you talk to them, it's like every step. It's completely foreign to what I was as a kid,
were they blown away?
Yeah. And super supportive, like amazingly supportive. They helped us financially kind of get that first demo record up and running with Chad and Joey, which was huge.
So you're performing, you make the demo, then what happens and how does it happen where a United States record label says, let's go, we want to spend money to promote this and promote you?
Yeah, well, back in the day, there was no TikTok to find songs and things like that. They had actually the A&R guys out in New York. He saw in... I don't know if it was a newspaper or something, what was going on, but they saw that an independent song was climbing the charts in the local newspaper in Sea Fox. It would show there. And I assume he saw it through that. There was nowhere else it would have been. And yeah, Jonathan Simkin, who was our lawyer, entertainment lawyer at the time and still is, he started getting calls. We got a call from Columbia, who we showcased for. We showcased for Roadrunner. We showcased for a couple others, but TVT, we really connected with Lenny Johnson, who was our A&R guy and really spoke to us. And yeah, we ended up signing a deal with them. But it was via just that demo, a song that won that radio station in Vancouver.
Was it to you, wow, this is so great? Or was it to you, oh my God, now this, what the pressure of a record deal? Now what do we do?
Yeah. It was, it was very, very scary. It was very, very scary. The other guys, I think, were more prepared for it because they had played shows and that was kind of their thing and what they were already doing. But yeah, it was very, very scary for me.
What first happens then? What's the whirlwind that then happens once you're on a big label? Or is it not a whirlwind at first?
Not a whirlwind at first. It was, we got our advance, quit our jobs, drank and partied it away. And then we went to Seattle. Rick Parosher, who was like I didn't know it at the time. I wasn't really into who produced what records that I liked. But I knew he was a Seattle producer and his name came about as a guy who wanted to work on a couple new songs with us to finish off our first record. And so we had written a few songs. One of them was Wasting My Time. We got sent down to Rick Parosher to produce a couple more songs. And he did Pearl Jam 10 and he did all the Seattle stuff like Wood, Alice in Chains, Blind Melon. He did a lot of that stuff. We did work with Cornell. So he was like a dream producer. It was really strange. So it was like a quiet kid who like really, really appreciated that music. That was my music that I really connected to first outside of my parents' stuff was the Seattle scene.
Same, me too.
Yeah. And so being able to like go down and work with a guy where you're in London Bridge Studios where 10 was cut, where all those vocals were recorded, it was just a dream come true and very, very inspiring. So it almost felt like I was on a trajectory that was almost fate. Because it's weird to say it like that, but sure. But it was everything lined up. It's like, how is this happening? I quietly dreamed of singing these songs and doing this stuff. How am I now working with the producer of these records and, you know, all the stuff that was going on with Nickelback at the time? And yeah, it was strange, man. It was really weird to look back on.
You talk about the music that you first like connected to, you know, and for me, where country music was, because I was in a rural place in Arkansas, that was the first music that talked about where I was from. But the first music that I actually like felt, because again, I was a kid who got beat up all the time. Mm-hmm. I was the Dirty Kid. It was that 90s, I won't call it grunge only, but it was just that alternative grunge, even kind of pop rock that came a little later. That yep. that spoke to me as well. And yep. I can't imagine being right there where it all started, right as you were starting as well.
Yeah.
I think there are probably a lot of comparisons. And I would be like, man, am I as good as these guys? I don't know if I'm in the same room that they were. I think I would be worried that everybody was judging me based on all the greats.
Yeah, I mean, all the self-negative things you could put on yourself, right? For sure. Yeah, it was a scary environment for sure. But Rick was great with us, and he really believed in that song especially. Like,
did you have confidence though at this point? Was it no. developing still?
No. It was all masked. You know, a lot of it was masked, and I'm just riding the wave, like white knuckling it, as my counselor would describe it.
When you're singing, at this point, your voice is your career. It could be a 6-month, 3-year, 10-year career. Mm-hmm. But when do you start to care about your voice? Because if you get sick, if you party too hard,
yep.
if you A, B, C, D, E, F, G, so many things.
Yep.
Because you don't have a history of building that muscle at this point. You don't have 5-7 years of singing consistently to build the muscle.
Well, I did.
Just because alone?
Alone. Yeah, I did. That's all I did, man. That's all I did. I would like, whether it was Pearl Jam 10 or Alice in Chains Dirt or Super Unknown or Bad Motorfinger, those were my vocal lessons. That's how I learned to sing. And I think if you listen back to my first record, like Waste of My Time and the stuff and Delivery and my tone, and there's a lot of comparisons to who I described as sang along to, especially like the Vetter thing, right? It was constricted, a little more aggressive, less bright in tone. So when I started caring about my voice, I took a bit of that constructive criticism that really bugged me at the time. And taking it seriously, I didn't want to let anybody down with the shows and stuff. And I started going into vocal lessons. And then that's when my voice really changed.
Good or bad?
Good. Yeah. Good.
Did you learn to sing? I won't say better. That's such a open-ended, but did you learn to sing in a specific way that allowed you to sing
efficiently?
Pure? Oh, I was going to say more pure, more efficient.
Yeah, your true tone, right? It's just learning placements, and my range exploded. Like I was hitting notes that I didn't really hit when I was growing up and singing and stuff.
Because you were emulating your favorites and not actually focused on finding what you were the best at.
Yes, yeah. I didn't really understand what my voice naturally sounded like. So I went through that process with like on my first like big touring, Wasting My Time and that first record.
Yeah. That song, now I was working in pop radio at the time. So when it came to us, I'm assuming it was put out on Rock Alternative first.
It was, yeah.
So it did so well there, they decided for it to cross over. Was that a conversation that you were listening to when they were deciding on doing it, or they just go, we got to go with this, it's killing
them? I had no idea what was going on, right? Like to the point where the first week of release of Wasting My Time, Lenny, our A&R guy, called me up. I was in the little place that I was renting. And he's like, hey, you got added to K-Rock out of the gate. And I'm like, is that good? Like, I don't know. What's K-Rock? And so all of that stuff was just, we were just along, like I said, white knuckling, along for the ride. And it being scary and us being green, it was easy to get caught up into the, you know, we drank a lot. We drank and partied a lot. And looking back on it, and yeah.
I never really, and I'll catch up in a second, but I never really understood why so many artists would fall to alcohol and drugs until I started to tour all the time myself.
Mm-hmm.
Just because there's so much time.
Yeah.
There's 22 and a half hours to fill.
And there's so much fun to be had.
Well, yeah, I'm not good at having fun. But, you know, even going out for 4 nights in a row,
mm-hmm.
you finish the show, go to the bus. Well, you got to fill a couple hours. So what are you going to do? You sleep as the bus drives. You wake up. There's all day.
Yeah.
There's all day.
All day.
To just fill with sun.
Yep.
And then I finally started to go, okay, you'd have to become obsessed or addicted to something.
Yeah. I mean, you really are, like, when you're in that environment, you're really faced with a lot of stuff that you haven't dealt with. Like it really puts you in a challenging spot. And the numbing and the self-medicating is especially when you're talking about 3-4 days. Back in the day, we'd be doing, Yeah, I mean, it's 6 weeks. We can come home in 4 months. And then we come home for a week and then off for another 3 months.
That's crazy.
And just the grind of hitting like the rock radio every morning and doing the 2-3 stations in the market, the acoustic versions for all of them. And so, yeah, it was a lot of a blur back in the day.
When did you start to feel that that song had kind of made it into mainstream? Meaning you had to start seeing 15-year-old girls in your crowd instead of 32-year-old men.
Quick. We saw it quick. It was really, really, really quick. And the advantage that we had was the whole Vancouver scene that was happening with Nickelback. They had put out one record locally, and it did okay in Canada. They got their deal at Roadrunner, and they released How You Remind Me just after we released A Waste of My Time. So they, for lack of a better word, they cock-blocked us. Over the entire world at rock radio, they were number one and we were number two. and we were on tour with them. They took us out on tour.
Did you guys get along still?
Oh, yeah.
Did you remain getting along?
Yes. Relationship has morphed over the years and stuff, but all of those guys, I see Chad often.
I was surprised. We talked to Chad. I like Nickelback. And
yeah,
I think they've gotten I think they got so popular that once you become so popular, then it's like Coldplay. You can just insert whatever band is really takes hold. And then eventually everybody takes hold. So then everybody wants to be like, well, I don't want to be the one. So they got to counter it.
Mm-hmm.
And Nickelback has suffered from that so much, but always been a big fan. But I never talked to Chad personally. And we had him on the show. And I was a bit shocked at how nice and how funny he was, how self-deprecating.
Yeah.
I thought, holy crap, this is not what I expected from the guy from Nickelback.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's Chad. He's not what you would expect, and that's kind of like I've always looked up to him. There's that group, including Joey and Chief, and there's a whole group of guys from that area that I looked up to. They were my big brothers, and they were my guiding light.
When you're born, you say he's your guiding light. Were you born? Do you come out as a baby and lift your right hand and go, I promise to be nice to everybody and be funny and great? No,
we got our assholes. We got a lot of them.
I never met a mean Canadian.
There's a lot of them.
I'm telling you, I haven't.
There's a lot.
We would go up, and because I'm on a bunch of stations in Canada as well, and Mike and I went into Canada, and we went to Toronto, and we're walking around, and I've got my phone, and I'm looking, and somebody approaches me, and I'm like, oh, my God, what's about to happen here? And they go, oh, I can help. You don't need a map. And I thought I was about to get robbed, but instead it was the exact opposite.
Yeah, it can be. Like, Toronto's a really friendly place. There are some.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's a numbers game.
Oh, yeah.
But still, I've not met a mean one. French, you fluent?
I cannot speak a word.
Really?
No, it's not a thing, man. Like, honestly, I took French grade 9. I think it was a required course you had to take. But no, you can take any other language in high school up in Vancouver. It'll better suit you than French. Nobody speaks French in BC.
So eastern side, though.
Oh, the prairies?
It's Francais.
My guitar player is from Peace River, Alberta, and that's a very French-speaking town. So there's those, like, French communities spread out through the prairies.
Dang, I just expected all of you guys to come in here with beignets.
No.
Whatever you call
them. Eating croissants.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots. And Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events. There is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com. TECOVAS.com.
TECOVAS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How do the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as the Boar's Nest, Sue's Place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, that's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the birth of outlaw country music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest. Hey, it's Bobby Bones. I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the kids at St. Jude. St. Jude's been leading the way in the world's best survival rates for some of the most aggressive forms of childhood cancer. Your support means that families never get a bill from St. Jude for treatment or travel or housing or food, so the families can focus on helping their child live. And that really hits home for me because I've been to St. Jude many times. I've hung out with the kids, played music for the kids. I was in the hospital a lot as a kid. Now, I didn't have cancer, but if it wasn't for people stepping up, I don't know that I would have been able to go and stay in the hospital and be taken care of. So that's why we do this, to take care of others. You can help St. Jude stop childhood cancer by becoming a partner in hope. When you do this, you'll get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. So join all the doctors and researchers, you know, and me in this fight, and just text the word Bobby to 785-833. It's only six numbers, but text the word Bobby to 785-833. When did the fault start to you, or just in general, start to not be as much of a priority musically?
It was, well, when did it not become a priority? You know, I think we lost that really early. We watched, and I looking back on it, it's something that I wish I approached differently, but we were just too caught up in the other stuff. But we watched Chad write his second record on the road. In his bus, he had converted little studio stuff in there to do demos and write. And we didn't do that. We didn't do that and that's when we should have really taken it seriously, but we didn't.
So you did not use the momentum?
No.
Properly?
No, we did not. No. So we went into like that second record thing, right? Where you have your whole life to write the first record and blah, 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 right? The second record, we came in with our pants down. And honestly, it was probably more me than anybody else. And I don't know if my experience with the first record and how it just happened, like, and it happened well. I think I maybe got caught up in like the, this is going to happen again. The stars are going to align. I'm not worried about it. We'll get in there and make magic happen and stuff. But in reality, as you get older and learn, watch other people do it, it's put the hours in at the time, and you got to work for it no matter what. In fact, that's the time to work the hardest.
Were you surprised that it didn't work?
I don't know. I think once we were in the studio and recording the second record, I think the vibe was different. I think it was more negative. I think there was, yeah.
Towards each other?
A little bit of that. Yeah. I think just being on tour so long, and us, you know, we were friends before, but we weren't roommates, for months on end. So there was a lot of stuff that just wasn't dealt with, and, resentment here and jealousy there, and, you know, just workload and it can get ugly, you know?
So I think the benefit of where I come from and when I came from is very similar to you, in that I grew up again in a rural part of America, but I had digital, I had Napster. I was able to be influenced by everything. And mm-hmm. you grew up in a very rural place.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in a rural place. So country music was a part of our lives, your parents, my grandmother, my parents. But at the same time, in the 90s, I was very much into alternative music, all of it. I was into hip hop.
Yep.
And I was able to have all of this influence because of the ability just to get it. I mean, that was it. Mm-hmm. We were the first generation to be able to just get the music we wanted when we wanted it.
Yep.
And so because of that, similar to you, I've worked everywhere and it been absolutely authentic to who I am. When I was doing alternative radio, I was doing sports. When I was doing hip hop or pop, that was always who I am, because I believe you don't, and you aren't just one lane of a person. We as people aren't just one lane.
Of course.
You're not just Dallas from default. You're also Dallas who grew up in the area, influenced by the music that you were influenced by.
By everything, your life.
Yep. So, and I want to get to just how dominant and how great you are inside of country music, but what was that in between before you decided, now I'm going to go to this other passion of mine? Mm-hmm. Because Default had to end, and then did it really end? Like where you tried and it was like, this is just not going to work. Like, yeah. What was that to go from A to kind of A2?
Yeah, so we had the second record, didn't do as well. We had the third record, didn't do as well. And then we had I don't know. But anyways, we recorded a record that we really, really believed in. It was mid-late 2000s. Some great songs on there. Written with Marty Fredrickson and Zach Malloy, who I know are here. And our record label, like 2 weeks before we had a release date, filed for bankruptcy. Mm. And so we were in limbo with that for a good year and a half. And during that time, we had discovered, as he was cashing our checks to him on his deathbed, we were being robbed blind by a business manager that was recommended by our management team at the time. And so not only we were like destitute. We as a band had gone down the other side of it. Label was bankrupt. We had this great record we're sitting on. We had the Canadian government coming at us hard,
like the IRS here.
Yeah, man. Situation. Yeah, CRA. We have GST tax, which is like you get it and then you remit it to the government, right? And so as an American accountant, he was taking the GST and not remitting it. And so we had it was like $400,000 staring at us. And with that, you can't hide it with a corporate thing. You can't just hide it and get rid of it that way. It's personal. They go after your house. They go
so,
after
So, okay, Anna. You can't just have, pardon this, but Default, the entity, go, we're going to go bankrupt here and not owe it anymore.
No, it was personally. We owed that taxes personally, all Holy of it. Crap. Yeah, man, it was ugly.
Divided three ways?
Divided four ways, yeah.
So each of you guys owed six figures?
Yeah, we were staring at over $100,000 each.
Oh, my God.
And we were broke, and we had kids, and... the business had chewed us up and spat us out, right? We had some residual stuff, obviously, that kept us afloat a little bit with Wasting My Time and some shows that would come in every once in a while. But it was like, where is our future in this? And where is my future in this?
So what do you personally decide to do while this is happening? And do you have do you talk to your wife? Are you like, we're in trouble? What happens?
Around then, I split up with my wife. We had split up, mid-2000s by then. And I was pretty lost. I was very lost. So I didn't really have anybody to talk to really about it. But I would go, this kind of gets into like the Joey thing and how our first trip down here kind of happened.
And that relationship still existed. I'm sure you didn't see him a whole lot though while you were out, did you?
No, but he was always around and we had like done some stuff with him and Chad, like recorded a song here and there. Yeah. So we had always kept in touch and like Chad is a super generous guy to come into town and invite us everybody out to a steakhouse for dinner party and go out and have fun and stuff. So I'd see him, occasionally go to a hockey game or whatever. But yeah, like at that time we were doing the occasional show and Joey and I had talked about our mutual, not we were going to wanted to go to Nashville and do it, but we were talking about like country artists that we liked and our mutual like for that. This one, another pivotal moment for me, like at that time we had joked about going down, I guess, going down to Nashville and making a record. And I was on tour with 3 Days Grace across, we were like on arena tour across Canada, 3 Days Grace, like still living a dream in some sense, right? Like being able having that opportunity and doing that.
They have everything.
Oh, they got tons.
About you.
Oh, yeah.
That's the right
yeah,
band, though.
That's okay, the right one, yeah. And I was miserable. That was the most miserable I had been. I was out on the road. Lonely, still drinking. We had just played in Quebec. It was Montreal, great show. And I messaged Joey, just miserable in the back of the bus, country record, ? And 2 weeks later, we were down here writing with Wiseman and Rodney Clawson and all them. So that was a pivotal moment, him and I. But that's where I was in that stage with Default. It was just, we were afloat. We had this huge debt. And no way of like it was dead endish, right? It was I knew that was kind of the end of that. And then my message to Joey was like, if I'm going to keep doing this and keep doing music as a living, it has to be something that I want to be that I'm passionate about. And I'm not passionate about this anymore. I'm in a different stage of my life. And I had seen classic rock bands, like the mid-level ones, come and go throughout the airports. And there's nothing, like, I'm not negative about anything like that. It's just, that's not how I wanted to, it's not music to me. I wanted to keep creating new music and have it be a constant conversation, not go out and do the odd classic rock gig, you know?
Did you feel like you could write music based off how lost you were, the pain that you were going through? Obviously, you were then through a divorce. Could you, in the back of that bus, when you're by yourself, were you able to put any of that in a song?
It came out more with how the delivery of the melody was. So it came out more like that, how it felt, as opposed to what it was saying. So lyric was always a last thing.
Do you write melody first?
I've always been that way. Like I've come down here a few times, originally when Joey and I first came to do some writes, and some of the co-writes that I had done made it on the first record. But like the whole writing style about it was completely foreign to me as a kid in the garage writing the other way. It was freaky for me.
Because you're with people. Was that the style, like doing co-writes?
We would just jam.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's how it would be, right? And we would piece it together that way, as opposed to, you know, yeah, coming down here. It's obviously not a surprise. It's quite different down here with 9 to 5, and you get in the room and you write. It's very intentional. So that freaked me out, and it was so foreign. And it's just not how I work, right? It's just that it just wasn't. And you know, a bright part of me not being down here is that I haven't really worked that muscle a whole lot, and I'd like to in the future. You know, have more cuts on my own records and get more in a creative mode from the ground up with a song.
When you leave Nashville after your first trip down, how many days were you here?
I think 2-3 weeks. We spent a lot of time down
here.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. So when you leave, what was the feeling?
I was inspiring. I was really proud of just being in that opportunity and having that go well. And making the connections, because we had a great time with Seth England, and when Seth was just was pitching the songs for Craig and meeting everybody, all the writers, Chris Tompkins and Rodney, like I said, it was a new inspiring group of people. And watching Joey just do his thing too. I mean, he's just, like I said, him being a big brother, I've always he's just been inspired by his ability to just get in there and just fucking do it. You know, there's I know Joey has, everybody has their own self doubt and their own stuff, but he just gets his foot in there and does it. He just does.
When you're now Dallas Smith, the country artist, or Dallas Smith, the, I don't know, not default Dallas Smith, mm-hmm. It's a change. I mean, you're your own. It's just you now. Was that it all? Did some of that stuff kind of resurface from the very beginning again when you didn't feel as if, or was it like, thank God, now it's just Dallas?
Oh, for the stuff now?
When you first started, because again, it's almost new, and I have friends who have gone from being in groups to solo, and at first, and this it may not be your story at all, at first they're like, this is going to be great, I'm going to go solo, but then you get up there and you're like, wow, I kind of don't have anybody to rely on other than myself, and now it's my name too.
Yeah, that is an adjustment for sure, and it's a constant adjustment, just coming my background and my personality, right? Me being, I've always been comfortable with a group of that was my thing, right? We were all front and center in the band, and that was just the thing. Where now, yeah, it's just me doing the interviews. So it's just me on stage, sort of. I include my band a hell of a lot. Like I got a really entertaining, awesome band that helps lift that weight off of me a little bit. But yeah, that's a constant thing. Like I've always looked up to like guys like Keith Urban. I mean, he's been my guy, like, as far as like a guy who can play and sing and entertain. Like who, it doesn't matter who's around him. You know, I've always, that's what I strive to be. But
any anxiety before you go out for the first time as just you, sonically, it's a bit different. The instrumentation, you singing the songs is a bit different. You're the same person.
Yeah.
But any anxiety there as you're about to launch into the Dallas Smith part of your career right around that time?
There was anxiety before the record was out. Because I had always heard like the country, you know, it doesn't matter. Country doesn't like outsiders coming in. And
I mean, me too. I heard the same thing before I came here.
Yeah, of course, right? And I think you know, at that time I was the record had come out at radio, and out the gate it got a lot of support at Canadian radio.
Like, first single?
Somebody Somewhere. It's one of my favorite ones, co-written by Dustin Lynch. It's just it's a banger of a song. Did really, really well out the gate. And I got a little sidetracked there. What were we talking about?
No, I was just talking about when the first song comes out.
Yeah.
It sounds like, though, you had major support early.
Yes.
And that actually was that boost.
It helped, right? So, yeah, that's where we're going. But so by the time I was playing shows, I had some, like, afternoon slots. I had a really talented band behind me that I was friends with. And I really, really believed in the songs. I really believed in the record. I had been through the process of making records and knowing how they feel. And how they feel to you when you leave the studio and how connected you are to those songs. I had big belief in them.
If you're playing a set now, do you play any of the default stuff?
Yeah, we play Waste of My Time. Yeah, just acoustically, me and the guitar and maybe my guitar player. Yeah.
Was there ever a stage where you didn't want to do that because you were separating yourself from it?
It's never that guy.
That's awesome. It's hard to not be, but Darius is a great example of that, right? Yeah. He always played the Hootie songs.
Yeah.
He was like, I am who I am.
Man, honestly, that is what it is, right? That's my journey. My story will speak differently to, that's my journey. I will speak, like, I'm shy. I'm very internal, but I can wear my heart on my sleeve, like, really easily. Yeah, that song, I'll always enjoy playing it. I will.
Is always. It to you a bit, I'll just go weird, that basically there's just a line that separates the two countries and you will sell out an arena. You will have tens of thousands of people go watch you at a show in Canada and you drive down to Iowa and they're like, I don't know who this dude is.
Why are you named Dallas? You're Canadian.
That also.
Yeah. It's changed. Like when I first released Jump Right In 2012, I mean, records was still a thing. I mean, streaming was pretty, so it was harder to get any sort of access down here. But it's become, like, honestly, by the numbers, I have more listeners down here than I do in Canada.
Ticket sales, though.
Ticket sales, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I've seen pictures of your shows. And they're, I mean, it's crazy.
I have amazing fans up in Canada and amazing support up there. I feel like, honestly, man, like, going from the default stuff and going through that ride of, like, financially and optically and just, like, emotionally with that ride, being able to resurrect that song and play it in front of that many people and have a second career, you know? Yeah, I feel so fortunate. It's so few people that get to have a rebirth, learn from your mistakes in that way in the music business. It just doesn't happen. You know? So I feel very fortunate.
I ask about the ticket sales and, because there are pockets of where we are where, I'll just be honest, if I go out, I can't go anywhere without people taking pictures of me.
Mm-hmm.
But there are certain parts of the country I can go to where nobody has a freaking clue.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, I'm just another dude. Yep. And some of my friends will be like, is that weird that you can go to Vegas, people will be crazy. Like, look at oh my God, let's get a picture. But if you drive, you know, 4 hours and I'm in LA, nobody gives an absolute crap.
It's pretty awesome though, isn't it?
It is. Oh, I never thought I would love it, but I do.
Yeah.
I used to be like, man, this sucks. I can go, like, no. But now it's like the greatest is to just go somewhere and go, I don't have to worry about anybody recording me swimming with no shirt on.
Yeah.
Because I'm embarrassed in my body.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Can just be yourself and not have to worry about those distractions. Yeah. 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 It's, speaking about how fortunate, like, Canadian famous, I go to the grocery store and I shop, like, just down the street from my house and stuff. Like, I can go anywhere and I'll get a message on Twitter. Hey, was that you at Costco? Like, it's pretty rare that I get some. But at the same time, I don't have any really, besides, like, some tattoos and stuff. If I have a sweater on, like, I don't really have any distinct features.
If I take my glasses off, I'm this most generic white guy you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah, right? So yeah. It just...
If put sleeves on you in these glasses, you're me.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. But if you go looking for it, you can find it, right? If you want it, yeah. If you want that, but it's...
I'd walk around, wasting my time.
That's me.
Yeah. Hey, you ever heard that song? Yeah. You ever go to, like, the grocery store here or a gas station and you hear your music over the top?
Yes.
Or Outback? You hear it over the top?
Yeah, I hear it all over the place. I hear a song called Count On Me was a song we had on our third record. It was a song that got played a bit. And Denial here. And yeah, it's pretty funny.
When it comes to the CCMAs, mm-hmm. I mean, you're Garth Brooks. You're the greatest. You're the greatest. I'm just looking at numbers here. You don't answer it because you have to say, oh, that's not true. 44 CCMA nominations, 17 wins, Entertainer of the Year in 19, 20, and 21, 12 number ones, 24 top tens. You've sold 600,000 concert tickets. Jeez, man. Yeah, it's like I'm talking to somebody that's massive in a K-pop band, and I just have no idea the kind of royalty I'm next to.
I don't have that wallet, I can tell you that.
Were you able to pay back the government?
Yes, we were. We were, yep.
Well, I bet that felt...
Yeah.
I won't say good, but I bet it felt like there was a big old backpack that you're able finally to go and get it off.
Yeah, and honestly, man, it was... Yes. Having everybody all off on a clean slate, all of us, all four of us, it was a good feeling.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. Talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink, shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
TECOVAS.com. TECOVAS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How do the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as the Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts. That's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest. What do you love about touring now that you don't think you appreciated back then?
The process of it. The process.
What does that mean?
The message thread of when we're going to meet at the airport and just the friendships. Yeah, I'm surrounded and I've surrounded myself by the most amazing people. That's super important to me. I was surrounded by some great people back in the day, but now I'm surrounded by some fucking really, really good, like all crew. Everybody's great. And it's a big family. And the show is the show and the show is going to be better because of that camaraderie and that friendship and that process. And that I love like the guys, my crew guys and my band guys, they're my brothers. And that's something I really appreciate and love and take from this the most, where I didn't in the past, where it was, I allowed my insecurities to be jealous about this and just all of that BS that you don't realize about yourself before counseling and therapy. Get in the way of that stuff that you should appreciate. And there was a lot of things, a lot of opportunities that I didn't take advantage of and didn't appreciate because of that stuff.
Are you a guy that believes a lot of that happened just so you could get to this point?
Maybe a little bit. Yep. Yeah. I mean, this is a long game thing. It really is. And this is about, it's not about me having a castle. I don't care. I really don't.
Do you have a castle?
I don't have a castle.
Oh my God, do you have the castle of Canada?
Yeah.
We just find out now he's got a moat?
Yes.
God.
I got to throw and hit a cow with a rock from it. Yeah. So it's always been just the journey and development and just challenging myself, honestly, and just trying to learn about myself and learn the way things, why the way things were and why I was that way and just trying to grow and be happy And my records have changed from angsty to, you know, a lot of fun.
Do you pick, write, perform songs now at all influenced by being a dad?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, Sky Stays Us Blue is a song. I mean, a lot of them do. A lot of them do. Even stuff like the later Default stuff. Carson, my son, was younger and a real big guiding light for me as far as what was important in life. And certain songs started sprinkling in the later Default records. So it's always been a thing.
Were you named after a guy that played for the Boston Bruins?
I was.
You really were?
I were. Yep, I were.
I did not. I thought that was just going to be a stupid question. You're going, no, he's having to have the same name.
I actually have one of his hockey cards in my on my dresser in my bedroom.
Does everybody assume you love hockey because you're Canadian?
Yeah,
but it's true though. It's one of those stereotypes.
It's pretty true. I've got some friends, artist friends, even that just they couldn't give a shit about hockey or anything. They don't just Canadian just sports artists. In general. Yeah?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, sports. I get that.
Yep.
And I know nothing about hockey. And I have a friend that plays for the Preds here.
Is it Duchesne?
It is Roman Josi.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I don't know anything about hockey. And when I met him, they were like, he plays for the Preds. And I was like, that's cool. What position? And he told me, and I was like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, he's a stud.
Like, yep. Tell me. And now I know he's a stud, but I don't know. I think he's a defenseman.
Yep.
He's a defenseman, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, do you get to score? Like, I don't know anything about, but I'm a big sports guy. I do a sports show here in the States.
Mm-hmm.
But did you play hockey at all as a kid?
Street hockey. It's an expensive sport to play. So, yeah, I grew up in... You know, not a lot of extra money going around. So if instead of ice hockey, we played street hockey. And I was in like softball, baseball leagues. And actually, usually people bring this up to make fun of me and it usually works. But I was actually in bowling as a kid too. That was one of the, I won silver medal at the BC Games, the Olympics.
Is bowling bigger? Maybe it's not even bigger, but it's cold up there. So there's only so much you can do outside.
Man, honestly, our climate is, let's Seattle, first of all. It's just a lot of rain. But in North Dakota, you're getting a far more Canadian experience than I got.
Really?
And I've just, been even the accent, yeah. Right? It's pretty strong and cold. It's not like that where I am. You can
really?
Go. No, man. I've golfed like New Year's Day, Christmas Eve day, and then I can go the same day, go up and go skiing and go whale watching.
Well, that is unfair.
It is.
I just assume you're living in an igloo.
It is not an igloo.
365 days a year.
No, that's like a 100-mile radius right there in Canada along that border and along the islands there where it doesn't turn into an ice box. Everywhere else in Canada is a complete frozen ice box.
I mean, people assume I'm married to my cousin because I'm from Arkansas.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah.
You know, there are all these stereotypes that we have. And I'm not confirming or denying that I am married to my cousin. But
at least not first cousin. Yeah.
A Juno. Is that a Grammy?
It is. Yeah, it's a Grammy. Yeah. Yep.
And why is it called a Juno? Do you know? I don't even know why Grammy is called a Grammy as I asked that question.
A gramophone, right? That's the Grammy thing, right?
You know, oh my God, you're right. Yeah. That's exactly what that is.
Yeah,
you know
I learned that late, so don't feel shame.
That makes all the sense in the world. That's the trophy is a gramophone.
Yeah, but what is a Juno?
Yeah,
that's a good
what
question.
What is a Juno?
I really hope I don't get roasted for this, but I don't know if there's any really direct correlation like that to...
I wish I knew, just to throw in your face.
Yeah, I know,
just to be like,
I know.
Well, duh, I can't believe you didn't know.
I set it up on a tee for you here. It's a secret. I actually can't tell you. It's a secret.
What when you win a Juno, pretty cool?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah.
What's the shape of the Juno?
It is a statuesque figure. The one that I have has a little metal thing wrapped around a statuesque figure, yeah. Yeah, it's
not an igloo?
It's not an igloo.
I guess it was named after the first chairman, Pierre Juno.
So probably like...
Oh, that's pretty selfish.
Yeah, as we'll know. Yeah, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. What do you think? It's all about you, bud.
What do you think this is, a star or a fossil?
That's why it's a Juno.
I want to play a clip of Singing in a Beer.
Mm.
Here you go. I was hanging on every song, she was singing in a beer. So why this song? Of all the songs as a single, why this one?
Man, it's hard to put a finger on what just kind of releases that chemical in your brain, tells you like it. Yeah, it's a bit of that. And I've gone a couple ballad-ish songs in a row. 1-2 with Mackenzie was a completely different feel from this one. This is just more just straight, just play at the bar, have fun. Good festival song. Yeah, just a lot of fun.
You ever do karaoke?
Not really, but I one time after it was in Victoria, so just across on the island, Victoria, BC, kind of a home show. We played with Nickelback at the arena, and then went to the bar afterwards, and there was karaoke going on, and some guy got up, not knowing I was there, and started singing Waste of My Time.
That's so funny.
So I got to do that thing.
Did you do the thing?
I did the thing, yeah. But I got made fun of afterwards because I ended up looking back at the screen, looking at the lyrics while I was singing the song.
That's funny.
Like a true chump. Yeah, it was pretty fun.
Did the guy know it was you?
After the fact. Yeah, well, yeah, I walked up and took the mic from him like a... Yeah,
that's
I did the whole thing.
Did you put that on the internet?
Dude, that was like, YouTube didn't exist. That was 2002.
Okay, well, next time you're here, I don't know when you come back.
I'll do some karaoke. Yeah, absolutely.
We should go do it and just go like we're karaokeing and you perform that song.
Yep.
And then we'll watch. You crush it. He gets up and he sucks and everybody, nobody cares. that's fun.
Sing it like that default guy, not like that Dallas guy. Yeah.
So what is it? What do you find? What's fulfilling to you at this point in your career? You've done a lot of things at the highest level. Mm. So what is it now that kind of fills your cup?
Fills my cup.
Personally and professionally.
Professionally is you know, I have no things that I must aspire to be fulfilled. I really don't. I obviously want to keep growing and keep building my audience. That way it's just, I want to speak and touch people through my music and inspire and all those things, invoke emotion into people through the records that I put out. Have it be a bit of the soundtrack to their life. Like I had those records growing up and that's ultimately, you know, it goes back to seeing somebody sing those songs back to you. So that's a connection that I never would have made otherwise. And I get to do it on a grand scale. And for somebody that has a hard time getting to connect to people on that level, that's such a great thing. It's knowing that that happens.
Personally,
it's family, dude. It really is. I want to keep growing as a person, become a better husband, better father. And I want to share just the experience that I've had in my life and help people. And, you know, the Big Loud guys have given me an opportunity to have a side label with my partner, Scott Cook. So we've got, it's called Local Hay Records. So we're able to, you know, bring under a young artist. Sean Austin is a guy that we've signed, and he put out a song with Chris Lane last year. So like, you know, that kind of stuff has been a lot of fun. That's kind of professional, kind of personal, because I get to make those connections with those artists and like kind of share the personal experiences, you know, and how the music business can be.
Does your son sing?
Yes, he doesn't though. He's sports and a great lacrosse player. Guitars have been around my house his entire childhood, and the only time he's picked it up was when he was like three. And I still have the guitar. I still play it live. He took a ballpoint pen on this nice guitar I got from Australia, and just I never got it fixed. I never got it anything. So yeah, but it's always been around, but never really his. But he's starting to get into poetry. I do know the girl he was seeing, his girlfriend, and I think he's probably a little bit like me. I don't pick up the guitar at home and play. It's just I listen to music and stuff, but I sing goofily, like I sing along with my kids and stuff. But it's not like here's piano lessons. It just never was. I want him to just not force anything on him, and whatever he likes. And he just never really picked it up. But I think it might be something that he, deep down, I think, does want to do a little bit. I got to talk to him about it.
All right, three questions, and we're going to call it because we've been here for an hour. It's been fantastic for me. I'd keep you for two, but here we go. In your house, what is your favorite picture? Oh,
there is a picture of... it was early on in this part of my career. I had just started dating my wife, Kristen, super supportive. And we were doing the photo shoot for my first record and sort of like a rural part of BC in the middle of BC, sort of desert-ish. And there's a picture of us on the road, really long road, sort of looking down it, and we're just kissing, leaning in over the center line. Just giving each other a kiss. And that's one of my cherished photos. I got that beside my bed. And there's something about the photo that just captures our energy that we had at that time. And it's just a really good memory. Yeah, for a lot of reasons.
Ever been in a room, social, professional, but it's not being recorded. There are no cameras, no TV, no radio. And somebody that you admire just picks up a guitar and starts playing and singing a song, and you're like, holy crap, I cannot believe this is happening right now. This is so cool.
Yeah, I got to watch Chad write Far Away.
So Far Away.
Yeah, he'd sort of pieced that together, and it was in its infancy, and I saw him writing words down, and he was, it was just him and I. He just, I don't know what, I can't remember the circumstance of why that was, but he, yeah, he just picked it up, and what do you think of this, and started picking apart at it and stuff, and yeah, that was the, that was pretty cool.
So you co-wrote that, is what I hear.
I got no points.
Well, what's going to be, this is the final question here, as we wrap this up, like 2023 for you, as we get into it. How is this year? What is this year? What's the idea for this year? I don't want to say goal.
Yeah.
But what's the idea for 2023 that maybe is a little different than any other idea for any other year?
Well, I mean, the Canadian experience with the pandemic was pretty, it was long. I think you're starting to see touring coming back finally. It's starting to come back now. So just playing lots of shows and getting back to that, bringing the music live. That was gone for a long time. So that, I'm really going to enjoy that, playing the festivals up there. And then new music out in like spring, you know, out in time for the festivals, including the song you played there. 1-2 will be on that record. Hide from a Broken Heart was a song released as well, will be on that. And just, yeah, just grinding it out, man. I hope to, with the opportunity with Big Loud and being on the label proper now, and with Lloyd and Big Loud and Greg Thompson being management and stuff, it's, stars are aligning a little bit, so I'm hoping that we can bring some more music to more ears. And
yeah, me too.
Yeah, it's yeah. I hope to be down here a lot more and see a lot more of everybody and you as well. Yeah.
So you like the Singing in a Beer song?
I do.
Pretty good one.
Yep.
Well, Mike, let's add it to the countdown.
Okay.
We'll play it on the national countdown.
Sweet.
We'll add that, and because I like it too. I think it's
wait. I got to get clearance from the. Yeah. No, it's good. Yeah.
Well, if they say no, let me know. Until then, we're gonna go with okay. Until you tell us we can't.
Okay. Gotcha. Yep.
Yeah, and just when you come back to town, let me know. Come up and, you know, next time you decide to come down, bring a guitar.
Yep.
Come play the stage on the morning show.
Yep.
We'll make a whole deal. I'm a fan.
Dude, I can break out some of those old default songs. And run through a couple, just like
whatever you want to do.
Flagship songs through my career. Yeah,
I think it will be great, and I think it will be really cool for my audience to hear you perform. I mean, because again, I'm a fan. I know I've heard with my own ears, but I think it'd be really cool for you to do. So next time you're down here, let's make a point. Stay,
yes.
Come do the morning show.
Okay.
We'll do a whole deal.
Yeah, I honestly, I appreciate this opportunity, and I appreciate that invite. That's huge.
I'll forget I invited you as soon as you leave, and I'll forget who you are.
I'll remind you. I'll make sure I got your number somehow, yeah.
All right, you guys follow at Dallas Smith Music. Dallas, I've really enjoyed this, man. It's been, for me, this has been a real treat, because again, I've just enjoyed you in so many different capacities, and I love what you're doing now, and I said it before you were even here, so I didn't say it for any reason other than it just came to my mind. I was talking to Joey and other people. I've been like, man, he's so good. Like,
thanks, man.
What's the deal? And so if I can be a minor part of that deal happening here, that's a win for me.
That's huge. And like I said, it really is an honor to be able to come on a show like this and be able to tell my story. I mean, I've got a long, unique story that involve, you know, some people that you know and other people know in different bands and stuff. And to be able to get up here and tell my story is really, it's a great, great opportunity. So thank you.
All right, there he is. Dallas Smith, everybody.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop before attending your next concert. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink, shop new styles. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com. TECOVAS.com. You can probably spell it. You probably know it. Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel, it's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.